Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner with Blockchain Life, and I have with me a very special guest all the way back from, I believe, my high school days. This is Abel Miranda, and it's been over 25 years since we've chatted, but recently Abel looked online, saw the podcast, and tell us what you're doing now and tell us why you think this is relevant to your people.
Well, I've been teaching for 20 years. I teach history. Currently, I've been teaching world history for the past 10 years, and I saw your sort of teaser on social media about Blockchain Life, and I thought, you know, what is this about? So I just clicked on that, and you kind of explained that you see this as, you know, going to change everything in just a few years. It's already changing everything. So I just kind of commented, oh, absolutely. This is, you know, we're on the cusp of, you know, just huge monumental changes. I believe I wrote something to that nature, and that I teach my kids, my students this, and I've been teaching them about blockchain and Bitcoin and Ethereum and that kind of thing for about 3 years now.
Oh my gosh. And, seriously. Wow.
You know, so at that point you said, let's get in touch. And so here I am.
The reason why I brought you on is because I really believe blockchain is for everyone. And of course, I'm bringing on, last week I brought on a metaverse architect. Mm-hmm. She's 25. She is taking the edgy, non-mother approved classical, like, you know, she basically got a bachelor and master's. Mm-hmm. In architecture, but said, I believe that the future is in creating metaverse architect. And she's going for it. And then we've had other people that have been very deep in the industry, but I wanted to bring you on. I wanted to bring on pretty much everybody. And here's what I think, because it should affect history teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us why you've, you know, took the edgy route of 3 years ago saying, I'm going to teach on Ethereum, Bitcoin, blockchain. That's pretty edgy.
Well, in world history, we cover as much as we can. Obviously, with 180 school days, there's only so much you can do. So we start approximately 5,000 years ago with the, ancient Sumerians and move all the way through. I believe last year I covered the similarities between 1918, the pandemic during 1918, and 2020. So I got pretty far.
Yeah.
This year I've got, you know, a few more history bits to add if we get that much time. But really, you know, really early in history, we start talking about empires, the Lydians, various other groups. And the Lydians were the first people to use coinage.
Wow.
Once they start with coins, you know, as you go through history, really a lot of wars have to do with money, a lot of different activities, politics. You really can't escape it. And so, you know, I figured, well, you know, do these students, because I teach ninth and 10th graders, you know, do they know what money is?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, you know, here I've got a dollar bill, you know, this is money. And I tell them, well, no, that's not money. That's a Federal Reserve note.
Yeah.
That's legal tender. That's currency. What is money? And so we kind of, you know, I kind of ask questions, try to get them to think.
Wow.
And eventually I'll have some kids and they'll say, well, you know, gold and silver, that's money. And I'll say, well, you know, traditionally, yes, you're right. Gold and silver is something that for the most part, almost every culture in the world has agreed has some intrinsic value. Mm-hmm. But they can't really eat it. You can't really use it for much. For some reason, people want it. And so that's, you know, that's got some value. And then we kind of go through, you know, why is it we don't use gold and silver anymore? You know, people would, you know, shave off bits of the coins and do all sorts of things. And, you know, I try to bring in examples. I've been collecting coins since I was maybe 8.
Wow.
So, you know, I hope you don't mind. I have some examples here.
Yeah, do it. Go for it. Man, this is good.
Can't help it. I'm a teacher.
Hey, I'll take it.
So this is a silver coin. Nice. United States, probably not the best in focus, but 1923 Liberty silver dollar.
Okay.
Right. And this is a $20 gold piece, also from the United States.
Mm.
And so at one point, the United States was using gold and silver, just like any traditional, nation, any empire. Eventually, though, we started to realize, well, that gets a little heavy. So we started printing certificates. Here's a silver certificate.
Mm.
And this one's from 1935.
Wow.
So it says here, this certificate is legal tender for all debts, public and private. This certifies that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States one silver dollar. So I can exchange this for a silver dollar.
Wow.
So this was backed up by one of these.
Yes.
All right. Well, then as time went on, we started going to the United States note. This is from the 1960s.
Okay.
Now, just, the silver certificate and the note, I got in change. So I just look at my money when I get change and I'm like, oh, look at that. That was printed in the 1960s. What is this? So,
wow.
Of course today, and I didn't bring one, but the normal dollar bill today says Federal Reserve note.
Interesting.
And so as I show the kids this, they go, okay, well, if this is backed up by gold and silver, then we're fine. And I said, well, no, the Federal Reserve note isn't backed up by anything.
Yes.
And teenagers
since
go,
what was it? 70?
71, I think.
71.
It was Nixon took us off
Nixon,
the gold.
Nixon, yeah.
But in effect, to be honest, we were fighting the Vietnam War, trying to get to the moon. His Great Society, welfare program was going forward. We were already printing much more than we had backed up by gold. I mean, we were essentially off the gold standard several years before.
Wow. But not official.
Not officially. Yeah.
And then once he announced it again, it's like, listen, man, when you said, what about your 10th graders knowing about money? I didn't know about money till 44 last year.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't think people take the time. And by the way, have you read The Creature from Jekyll Island?
Yes, I have it on my Kindle right now. So
okay. So you know that there's a whole big history here that most people have no clue. And the government says, oh, how did inflation happen? Look at all this. That's just amazing. It just came out of nowhere. And no, it came as a direct result of the secret tax called printing money called inflation. But
inflation, yes.
Yeah. So you believe as a history teacher that if you were teaching my 10th grade, I have a 10th grader, I would love that. So what are some parents freaking out with you?
No. As a matter of fact, right after Christmas, I had two girls come up to me and say, hey, just so you know, I got some Bitcoin for Christmas. And I thought, that's great.
Wow. So Bitcoin did have a stereotype years ago about, hey, this is what criminals use. This is what funds drugs, pornography, all this. Ignorance, because dollars fund all those things too.
Oh yeah, $100 bills have traces of cocaine. We've known that since the 80s at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So
to say, well, criminals use Bitcoin is irrelevant because anyone can use anything. Mm-hmm. But as you've started to listen to the podcast, do you believe Bitcoin or crypto is superior? If so, why? And what do you see as a student of history? What's going to happen inevitably unless we fix some of this stuff?
Okay, so as I study and teach history, I think something that we need to look for are trends or patterns. And you can see it in the rise and fall of empires and of nations. In many cases, they start with a great idea. You've got honest people. Then as corruption creeps in, it starts, the worst part is when corruption affects all of society, not just the politicians.
Mm.
At that point, you've pretty much lost it. What we have here in the United States with our Federal Reserve note is a Federal Reserve, essentially a central bank that was established in 1913 on Jekyll Island, in Georgia. just south of where I live here, several hours actually. You know, they started basically by, you know, not messing around too much with, you know, sort of the status quo, but, you know, as they started, you know, and what they essentially set up was a cartel where these big banks can essentially print, you know, unlimited amounts of money
with no accountability.
Absolutely none. There, you know, the Federal Reserve is neither federal, nor does it have any reserves. It simply is a printing machine, so to speak. And so they print all these things, you know, all these dollars, and, you know, essentially lend it to large banks, lend it to the government, and they expect it to be repaid, you know, with interest. Those banks, of course, then give out, you know, loans to, you know, businesses and regular folk.
With
then,
fractional, you know, lending, so they don't even have what they have, like 10% of the actual amount of money.
Fractional reserve banking is what it's called.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the bank will get $1 million and then keep, you know, 100,000 and then lend out the rest of the money, which is why you've seen in 1929.
The run on the banks.
Yeah, the run of the banks. And I always use the clip from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes. I thought you would. I hope you would say that because I remember that as a kid.
Yes.
George Bailey runs in, takes his honeymoon money.
Absolutely.
Basically funds people so they don't have to go to Mr. Potter.
Yes, the savings alone, you know, and he just uses his own money. And when they're done, they have $2 bills and, you know, they're counting the seconds and the, you know, the clock hits the hour, they close it, they put it in the bank and they're like, you know, we hope they have babies, you know, because.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, seeing that as a kid, I always wondered, you know, why wouldn't the bank have your money? Well, obviously, you know, through fractional reserve banking, they only keep a small fraction in reserves for day-to-day transactions. You know, what we find ourselves in here is something similar to what the Roman Empire did. The Roman Empire had gold and silver coins. Then they started debasing it by adding inferior metals in it. Eventually, they start just paying people in salt and various other things because their money becomes worthless. And we know, you know, the empire falls for so many more reasons than just their money supply. But when money becomes dishonest, when it becomes disingenuous, that is when, you know, someone like me as a student of history, I start to become skeptical. I think, you know, what is in your wallet, so to speak?
Yeah.
And if it's not worth anything, if it's not really backed by anything.
Yeah.
Is there something else? So in 2012, that was the first time I heard about Bitcoin and the blockchain. And what I do for summers, usually, you know, instead of taking the whole summer off, I'll probably pick up a small job. And I've taught, you know, summer camps where, you know, I'll teach maybe rocketry or, you know, some little thing. But I was hired by a place that it's unfortunately gone out of business now called Youth Digital Studios.
Wow.
And they said, would you like to modify Minecraft? And I said, yeah, sure. You know, so they taught me how to, you know, it's a kind of a huge process, but, you know, basically we break it down and we add different characters to Minecraft and you could do all sorts of different things and set up your own Minecraft server and, you know, the whole nine yards. And, you know, I learned to program a little bit there. And then we started making sort of like Angry Bird type games that you could play on you know, an iPad or an iPhone.
Sure.
So we would sideload those onto, you know, the kids' iPhones. You know, it involved a lot of programming. So I was hanging out with a lot of folks that are always, you know, into, you know, the internet and technology. And one of the guys one day said, hey, you got any Bitcoin? And I said, what? Yeah. You know, what's that? And so he explained it to me and I thought, well, this is fantastic. You're telling me I can create, like mine my own money just by using my laptop or my computer. And he said, oh yeah, absolutely. Now at the time you could, today you can't, obviously. And he said, you know, you just have to open up a Bitcoin wallet. And he kind of told me what to do and you'll start mining your own money. And I said, so this is actually worth something. And at the time Bitcoins were worth maybe $100.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, cha-ching, you know, this is great. Then I found out quickly my computer became pretty worthless for mining.
And, why is that? Because of the high power?
Yeah, the hash rate, the video card that you need. You know, I was getting a couple of pennies, but it wasn't really worth it. You know, the fan was on full, you know, blast. Yeah. And, you know, so I thought, well, I'll kind of leave this for a while. I'll come back to it. But then I started teaching, you know, about money in history class. And I realized, you know, the future of money is in Bitcoin.
Wow.
That is the future. That's where everything is going. You can go right now to El Salvador.
Yes.
You know, El Salvador used to have their own, you know, reserve bank.
Yes.
This is five colones from El Salvador. They decided then to switch to the dollar, you know, over a decade ago, maybe 20 years ago. And now they're the first country in the world to officially make Bitcoin the legal tender.
It's crazy. It happened, I want to say May, June, last year, I believe.
Yeah, it happened at some point last year.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just remember people, you know, because I'm on Reddit all the time. And
yeah.
they go to El Salvador and they're like, hey, I want to use my Bitcoin wallet and buy something at Starbucks. And so they do. Then they make a friend with a Salvadoran and they have this Chivo wallet. And that thing doesn't work very well at first. So it's kind of interesting to see how that's
set up.
But, you know, as I find these trends, you know, I tell the kids, I tell them, you know, in teaching history, you know, money has changed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no one's going to be using gold and silver to make transactions. You know, people are going to be using Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, even Dogecoin, you know, you name it. There's all sorts of different things. And so I have to show them a video. You know, what is the blockchain? The fact that it's an open ledger and that everyone has a copy, that it through a consensus mechanism that doesn't really require any trust among parties.
Yes.
You know, everything is updated. And the kids, you know, their minds are blown because they think, so I don't have to trust anyone. And I said, well, essentially you don't. You know, but just think about it. Right now, you put trust in all sorts of stuff. You give money to Amazon. And things magically show up in the mail. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
You have to trust a whole series of people to make sure that it's packaged, that it's sent. If it's not sent from an Amazon warehouse, then it's sent through a third party. You have to trust some complete stranger.
Yep.
Who knows where they live, you know, to send all that. And the same thing happened with eBay when eBay first opened up. I remember, you know, thinking, well, I want to get this thing from eBay. And I thought, well, boy.
It's a risk.
Yeah, that's a risk. Today, eBay has all these, you know, sort of insurance policies in place where if it shows up, if it's broken, whatever, they'll give you your money back. But at first, you know, I just kind of said, all right, take my money. And stuff started showing up. So I thought, well, okay, that works.
Yeah.
You know, but with Bitcoin, you know, you trust the code. You don't trust the people. And I think that's a great way of changing everything. I mean, that's going to, you know, absolutely change the banking mechanisms that we have, the systems of transactions. I mean, everything is going to change because I don't need a sheet of paper that tells me that it's worth something. And I actually looked at the inflation calculator before I came on here.
Oh my
God. The Fed opened up in 1913.
Yeah.
So $1 in 1913 to get the equivalent buying power today, it would cost over $28. So that's an increase or a decrease in value of 2,700%.
Wow. Wow. I'm not good at math at all. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, it's like 2,700.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you're right.
I'll find it. I have it right here, actually. So.
No, I trust you. But but the dollar today, what I've heard, another way to say it is it's 96% less. Like, in other words, if I have a dollar, four cents is equivalent, but it's lost 96% of its value. I've heard some, like, is that the same thing?
Oh yeah, it's essentially worthless.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and that's why, you know, here, like the silver dollar, this is worth about $30. So, you know, the thing with metal, you know, with things of what we consider intrinsic value.
Yeah.
Right? I use that loosely. That has kept up with inflation. It's actually gone slightly further than inflation. So I get more than $28 worth of buying power if I were to spend this.
Wow. Because of scarcity.
Yes.
For one thing.
And with gold, the same thing. Back in the 1920s, I could buy a wonderful, you know, suit with that $20 gold coin, you know, a tie, a shirt, you know, nice shoes, socks, the whole nine yards. You know, I'd say for about, you know, let's see, how much is this one worth? About $2,500. I could probably buy the same out, you know.
Wow.
Go to Men's Warehouse, you know, maybe even someplace better, you know, get a nice suit. You know, so the that kind of money, okay, has kept its value, but it's the paper money that I can't really trust. And I mean, you know, like this, I became a multimillionaire a few years ago when I bought this for $2.
Yeah.
This is 100 million Reichsmarks from the 1920s. And of course, you know, in Germany, they would print these so insanely crazy, they never bothered to print the back.
Wow.
You know, so this is worthless. Now, am I a multimillionaire? Yes. Does that mean anything? No, it means nothing. Okay.
Wow.
This is a great example of a central bank overprinting. You know, while with Bitcoin, that is going to become scarce. There's only so much Bitcoin that can be, you know, printed. I think it's like 21 million.
21 million, exactly.
And by 2047, give or take, you know, that'll be when the last one is minted. At that point, you know, what are we going to use it for? Are we going to buy, you know, coffee at Starbucks? Are we going to, you know, hodl it, you know, for dear life? What is it that people are going to use it for? At that point, you know, I guess we'll find out. And that's the beauty of the future is we have this system in place that is a trustless system where we, you know, I essentially will say, I always tell my students, it's, I trust the code. You know, I know this is worth something because people desire it. You know, there's nothing of intrinsic value anymore. It's the desire. I showed a clip the other day because kids were thinking like, well, what do people desire? Well, there's about a 10-minute news story about a new documentary that came out about Beanie Babies. And so I showed, you know, a 5-minute clip and the kids were thinking, you're telling
people are idiots. Yeah.
Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, when they're worth $5,000 for, you know, a little blue pink, you know, sorry, a little blue elephant, people, you know, saw this as valuable and they would sell them on eBay. And today they're worthless, you know?
Wow.
Is that what's going to happen to Bitcoin? I don't think so, because I can't buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks with a Beanie Baby.
Yeah.
But in some places I can with Bitcoin or Ethereum. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And for the people who, because my parents were just here over the weekend and they're 70 and almost 71 and they get it, but they don't get it, you know? And I'm not saying like they can't understand it, but I'm saying each generation that's removed has more of a difficult time seeing the utility. So for example, my dad was like, okay, so Bitcoin, what if I can't buy a full one? And I'm like, well, they have, you know, Satoshis that are
Satoshis, broken yes.
into very, 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 very small pieces. I forget, like one, it's a millionth or something. I forget. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's one thing that a lot of people don't understand is like, you can actually break a Bitcoin into. Another thing is a lot of times they show Bitcoin in articles.
Oh, as an actual coin?
With a coin with a B, and people are like, where do I get that? And you don't get that. So again, I'm not insulting my audience. I want them to realize like, these are questions I had a few months ago. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that I want people to kind of realize that with Bitcoin, I think that yes, there's 21 million, but another thing that gets very complex is all these other coins. And there's currency exchanges. And what I've read about the future is that you're almost going to have a wallet that's going to have all of your coins, Dogecoin, you know, Cardano, you know, all these different coins. And it's going to basically show you the current value. And then, so it's not like you have to be like, do you accept Cardano? You know, do you accept Polkadot? It won't be like that. It'll be like you have your wallet and then you'll be able to essentially see the value of the whole.
Kind of like a universal exchange.
There you go.
It goes in your wallet. You see the value and you spend that value.
There you go.
And
there you go.
I think that's a great idea. There are so many altcoins. It's getting, you know, pretty ridiculous, but they have great ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, Bitcoin is essentially, you know, useful, you know, as a currency, but you look at Ethereum and you look at smart contracts and it just blows your mind.
It does. It does. And you then know. When I got into it, Ethereum was very expensive, still is, but then they created layer two.
Yes.
Which now allows us to do transactions for much cheaper, almost free. So yeah, it's like anytime there's a problem, just like with the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
When the automobile first came about, there were all kinds of problems. And first of all, it's like, well, where are you going to get gas? And then who's going to service it? You know, like the early adopters have always struggled until it's then mainstream. But there's massive opportunity in the beginning because it is unstable.
Yes.
So let me ask you, do you think, oh my gosh, I wish I would have bought a bunch of computers to do mining?
Oh yeah. You know, had I really, you know, understood it in 2012 when I first heard about it, absolutely. First thing I would have done is purchased a few Bitcoin and then, you know, got some better computers and just started mining.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I find it difficult to see that as a reality. I mean, I could join a pool. I could make maybe a few bucks a day, you know, under good circumstances with a regular computer. Now that, you know, video cards are horribly expensive, it might pay for itself in about a year. But at that point, I've just broke even, you know. So absolutely, if I had, you know, the foresight. And that's the thing about early adopters is they see what's possible.
Yeah.
You know, the first people that
and they put risk in it.
Oh, it's absolutely very risky.
Yeah.
You know, the first folks that were driving cars, there weren't any paved roads.
No.
You know, but everything had to change to make the automobile what it is today.
That's right.
And that's what's happening with Bitcoin. Everything needs to change. Oh, banking is going to change. This is where I, as a history teacher, I think, well, you know, we see power struggles. The Federal Reserve and other central banks, are they going to come out with their own version? Or are they going to try to regulate it? That's where I get kind of uneasy, because I think, you know, the story of history is a story of the centralization of power.
Yeah.
And we just finished the Middle Ages at school, you know, and we always talk about how the Catholic Church, along with the governments of Europe, centralized all their power, made sure no one could read the Bible. It had to be in Latin. You couldn't, you know, print it. You couldn't translate it. God forbid. Oh, man, if you translate that, you know, you're dead.
Yeah.
And the kids always, you know, they raise their hand, you know, what? Why would the church not want people to know about Jesus? And it's not that they don't want you to know about Jesus. It's that they want to control everything.
That's, you know, right.
And that was broken with Martin Luther and with the printing press. And that's what's happening with Bitcoin, is all the old systems of centralization are being broken up. And it takes a little bit of time. And there's a lot of risk at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids always say that. So how did Martin Luther die? Well, he died because he got sick and old. What? He didn't get burnt at the stake like everyone else? Well, no, but he risked his life on several occasions. And amazingly, he did survive and caused so much incredible change. And so, you know, that's what's happening. Right now we have Bitcoin, we have Ethereum, we have Doge, we have Shiba Inu, we have, you know, Namecoin. There's a whole list. But at some point, you know, these are going to come together, you know, and people are going to realize, wow, this is a whole lot better than the system that we have. You know, and every country has a system.
Yep.
But we're kind of leaving that. You know, the future, you know, I don't see borders disappearing very soon, but I do see, you know, impediments to money transfer absolutely going out the window.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's, I think that's why El Salvador did what it did, because there's so many remittances that come from the United States and other countries to folks back in El Salvador. You know, why pay Western Union, you know, 9% or 3%? You know, they're ripping off the poorest people in the world.
Yep.
You know, just send them Bitcoin and then they'll get all the money that you want to send.
That's right. And there is this very much philanthropic, humanitarian angle to Bitcoin and the unbanked.
Yes.
That, you know, you hear the bad headlines. Oh, you know, Ethereum is so not green. It's wrecking the environment, blah, blah, blah. Actually, when you do the deeper research, you realize that they're not using energy as we would think in the headlines. They're basically redeeming energy that's going to be wasted anyways. And then, yeah, there's all these headlines that in the beginning, it's like Gandhi's quote where in the beginning they hate you or they mock you or they laugh at you, then they, you know, ignore you, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually they join you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're close to that where you're saying, what is the Federal Reserve going to do? Here's what the Federal Reserve might do. They might say, okay, let's newsjack the adoption of cryptocurrency and then just regulate it. Mm. And so now we've put our money in a new medium, but we're still controlling it. And maybe only the Uber insiders will realize, okay, they just played. It's like inflation. They just tax us in a different way.
Yeah. You know, I see possible regulation coming down the pipeline, that's for sure. But there are so many altcoins, you know, can you regulate them all? And the beauty of the internet is it's decentralized, and decentralized, you know, money systems are hard to regulate. China, you know, they've tried and they failed. And that is one of the most, you know, one of the strongest governments when it comes to, you know, regulating people's lives.
Yes.
We talk about the social credit score at school that China has implemented, the fact that you can only play, I think, 3 hours of video games a week, which, of course, my teenagers are. Good gracious, you know.
I didn't know this. 10 hours a day. About this. What I don't know about this. What's the social? Tell me about this.
Okay, the social credit score is something that the Communist Party has initiated. Basically, what we have in China is if you think of 1984, kind of like a surveillance state,
right,
is what you have. And on your phone, you're going to end up with an app that gives you your social credit score. And it's based on what you do on social media, you know, how good you make the party look, you know, your kind of statements. Everything is filtered through an algorithm, and you'll get a percentage as far as, you know, how good of a citizen you are. And the higher the number, the better. You know, you'll get all sorts of privileges. You can travel. But as that number starts to decrease, and this has happened to several.
Wow.
Let's see. Reporters, that's the word I'm looking for. I wanted to say newspaper people, and nobody reads newspapers anymore. It's happened to several reporters where their score has gone to essentially zero, and they can't take public transport, they can't take the train, the bus, they lose their jobs. It's pretty serious.
Wow, and so social credit score.
Yeah, if China is doing that, and they find it difficult to stop Bitcoin, you know, and they have a lot of power over their population. Oh, yeah. Just imagine what Bitcoin and decentralized, you know, finance is possible. You know, what is possible? You know, when you said philanthropic, I love the idea of the smart contract.
Yes.
You know, if you and I start a nonprofit foundation, let's just say, as an example, we can set up, you know, a contract and say, you know, I feel I can sleep at night if I give money to these three, you know, philanthropic organizations. You know, I absolutely agree with them. You know, let's go and you know, raise money, sell something, whatever it is. As that money comes in, it, you know, that smart contract is initiated, and it just goes to, you know, the people you want it to go to.
Yes.
You can
so
do
we
the
avoid
most
money. Nothing against the CEOs of the world, but we avoid paying the CEOs $500,000 in their salary, and a lot of charities get a bad rap, rightfully or wrongfully, because of the overhead.
Yes.
But again, decentralization allows you truly to organize. Have you heard it, man? You got to look this up if you haven't heard about it. We did talk about it in an upcoming episode. The DAO, Decentralized Autonomous
Organization.
With the Constitution.
Yes.
That's pretty nutty.
Yeah, they tried buying an original copy of the Constitution and lost it by a few million dollars. But the fact that they were able to do that is mind-boggling. And the DAO really, I actually just taught about this last week.
Okay, cool.
I told the kids, I said, you know, and really a probably not the best, you know, example, but I said, you know, what if a vending machine was, you know, an autonomous organization? You know, what if it could, you know, accept Bitcoin? it could go online and you know, restock itself.
Oh yeah.
You know, if it could do all that stuff, it would be, you know, by itself autonomous.
Yes, it would.
And you just show up and you just, you know, open up your Bitcoin wallet and you buy yourself a snack and you go back to class. And the kids were like, yeah, but that's, you know, that's impossible. And I said, well, you know, we have self-driving cars coming up.
Yeah.
We have all of these things, you know, yeah. And, you know, my sort of positive side, I'm always more of a
optimist.
Positive, yeah. You know, an optimist thinker, you know, this is incredible. This is fantastic, you know, but I have to be somewhat realistic. You know, can bad things happen?
Oh yeah,
absolutely. You know, the metaverse has so much to offer for education. Yeah. You know, I can take kids, you know, into a castle, show them, you know, the way architecture was done, like actually just show them, okay, let's go over here. Do you see how this is placed? You know, this block is placed here. You know,
have you started to do that yet?
Only through like virtual tours on the okay. iPad. All the kids at our school have an iPad.
Okay.
And so you're kind of like 360 where yeah. you can sort of move around, you know,
yeah.
holding that iPad. You know, but I don't know.
But that'll be happening very soon.
Oh, I'm sure. It depends on how the schools, how they think through, you know, should we put these headsets on kids? Are they going to hack them and start playing games, but the teacher thinks they're, you know, walking sure. through a castle?
Sure.
You know, so there's a lot of positives, I think. You know, there are some negatives. Some people get addicted, you know, there's all sorts of things that could go wrong. But that happens, I think, with any sort of medium.
Yes.
You know, video games, people have, you know, video game addictions. Well, for me, you know, I might play Centipede with my kids, or, you know, Super Mario Brothers or something, and then we'll put it away and go outside and, you know, have a great time. Other people, you know, struggle with those things. So I think we need to keep that in mind, that there are some folks that are going to struggle with these changes.
Man, this has been so good. Wrap it up by telling A, your students, because who knows, they might listen to it. I'm proud of them for man, like, I'm really proud of them for studying these topics, because they are going to be light years ahead of most adults. So congrats to you, Abel, for doing that. Congrats to your students. But what would you say to other teachers, whether history or not? I believe blockchain is going to affect every subject. But what would you say to teachers who say, man, you know, I don't have the skills Abel has. I don't know blockchain that much. I'm scared to talk about it because a kid might ask me a question I don't know. What would you tell educators as we wrap up today?
What I would tell educators, don't be afraid of the future. Don't be afraid of change. That is something we've all had to deal with. Education goes through cycles, you know, whether it's an open classroom or a, you know, closed classroom, you know, teacher-centered, student-centered. Don't be afraid of that. Look into blockchain, look into Bitcoin, you know, study the subject yourself. There's a Greek man that wrote a series of books, Andreas.
Oh, and Anantopoulos.
Anantopoulos, thank you.
Yes.
You know, read his stuff.
That's good. You
know, there's a lot of things, and educators are, you know, natural learners. That's what got me involved in this, is I thought, ooh, something new, something I can learn about. So I just dove right in. You know, don't be afraid of it. And if you don't understand, you know, ask someone else, ask a younger teacher. You know, they probably have their Bitcoin wallet, you know, in their pocket, you know, have them open it up, you know, have them explain it to you. And that's the
that's
beauty
so good.
Of education is we're also the learners. You know, I learn stuff from my students all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, spread the knowledge. That's going to make the world a better place. And I think that'll make our schools better. That'll make society better, because one thing schools fail to teach is how to handle money, how to budget.
Oh, that's true.
Well, checks are passe, my friend. Yeah. You know, now we
and need even checks, even the old school people who are like, oh, you know, checks, electronic money.
Yeah. We need, like, to teach them.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, a check, like, I get a piece of paper, I deposit a piece of paper, and my accounts online changed with numbers. There was no money being passed. So even your diehard traditionalists have to admit that we've passed on.
Oh yeah. You know, we've had digital money for decades.
Yeah.
But blockchain is so much more than just that.
Exactly. Oh yeah. And that's my passion is, you know, how is blockchain affecting publishing or medical field? There's so many things that are coming. I'm starting to befriend a lot younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Like my podcast is having, last week we had several 25-year-olds and I'm teaching them things inadvertently like you are with history. And they're like, oh, that does affect today. And then they're teaching us. So I do think, yeah, that the learning has become much more 360.
And once you understand the past, you can make sense of the present and sometimes even the future.
Yeah.
And as a history teacher, I tell my students that all the time. The crash of 1929, the crash of 2008,
oh.
I was ready for the COVID crash. You know, I told them it's going to crash and I'm going to start buying stocks. you know,
you were ready. In other words, you trusted your behavior.
Mm-hmm. So you learn so much from the past and you know, even the iPads, I show them, you know, I've got an old, one of the, you know, original Macs in my classroom.
Oh, nice.
Just this little beige box with a 9-inch screen. And I tell them, you know, this runs at 2 megahertz. This, you know, iPad runs at, you know, 3000, 4000 gigahertz, you know, and, you know, and we look, sorry, we compare the differences in technology and the kids are just blown away. You know, why would anyone carry something like that? I said, well, it has a handle and it came in a backpack because it was portable, you know.
Right.
You know.
Then you tell them, and then you tell them 30 years from now, kids are going to look at you, my students, and they're going to be like, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have it in your head. You didn't have it implanted. What's wrong with you? Right.
Yeah.
Well, this has been amazing. Do you want us to, follow you anywhere? I know you're a teacher. Do you got any, or you just came to add value? Is there anywhere I can send people?
I just came hopefully to add value. I'm on Instagram and I'm on, Twitter at, Abel Miranda, or there's several of us though. One of them is a full body tattoo artist from Madrid. So
okay.
I'll look for the one with a Spider-Man on it. I'm on Facebook. I don't really talk about Bitcoin and blockchain a lot online, so
yeah.
I'm not sure I have a lot to add there. I'm very careful as a teacher. You want to be, you know,
sure.
Very careful what you say on social media.
Sure.
Who you befriend. So I put memes. You know, I just kind of have a good time there. But
well,
I love
you added a ton of value today. Seriously,
I would love to stay in contact with you. You know, definitely. I
think yeah, it's
definitely worth it.
I have some big plans for teachers in the metaverse.
So I can imagine.
I do. So we'll be in touch. And thanks for listening and thanks for sharing this podcast. And yeah, if you know somebody, I don't say, you know, you got to be XYZ to get on the show. I just think you got to have passion and hunger. And you do. And you, I wrote that down. That's going to be your theme for your podcast. Don't be afraid of the future. That's the little graphic we're going to put.
Perfect. Love
it. Yes. All right, my friend. Well, you take care.
You too. And thank you so much for having me on.
All right. We'll see.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.